we present Best Sellers. Best Sellers, featuring great works by famous authors of today and yesterday. In June 1942, two German U-boats headed quietly into American waters, aimed at two isolated beaches. On board each craft was a team of four men, eight specialists, primed for an audacious mission, codenamed Operation Pistorius. But neither team knew of another passenger with an even greater mission that could shake the world. He was the Ninth Man. The Ninth Man. A chilling story based on historical fact by John Lee and dramatized for radio in 25 episodes by Victor Max.
By all means, Mrs. Shepherd, but I wouldn't advise it. As I have said, what he's doing is classified. I understand your concern, but he's... Well, perhaps I can explain it this way. You see, here at the White House, we sometimes have to work out of a pool. Sometimes there's limited space for reporters, so we draw lots to see who will cover an assignment for all of us. We had one like that last Thursday. Your husband was the lucky man. Believe me, I would have traded places with him in a minute if I'd had the chance. It's a top-notch assignment.
I see. But that still doesn't explain why he didn't call. It's so unlike him. What kind of an assignment is it?
Well, that's the point. It's classified. You see, Mrs. Shepherd, one of the prerequisites of the assignment is that the reporter simply drops out of sight until it's over. If word got out to the enemy, they might...
Enemy?
Oh, no, it isn't dangerous. Actually, I'm not supposed to say anything, but you're his wife, so I guess I could give you a hint. If you've been reading the newspapers, then you know there was a very important visitor in Washington last week from England. Well, the important visitor had to go home last Thursday. He took an American diplomat with him and three White House newsmen. So you see, secrecy was very important. If the enemy had known when he was leaving, they could have arranged a fleet of fighter planes to try and shoot him down.
My husband is with him?
I can't tell you that. All I can tell you is that in a week or two, when everything is finished, you'll be hearing from him. So will the whole world. You'll be very proud of him, Mrs. Shepherd.
Well, he could at least have dropped me a postcard so I wouldn't worry.
No, he couldn't. From the moment he was selected to go, he was placed under quarantine. Believe me, Mrs. Shepherd, I have probably told you too much already. If you say anything to anyone, even the most trusted of friends, you could be putting your husband's life on the line.
I won't say anything.
Good. You could do him a favor, too, while you're at it. He was worried the day he left, afraid his newspaper might wonder why they hadn't heard from him. I've been sending them a few of my stories under his byline to keep them from worrying. But, well, it occurs to me that you could handle it better. Why don't you call them and tell them you just talked to your husband and he's sick or something? Say he has the flu and won't be able to stir for a few days. That way they won't worry.
I don't know. It might make them mad later when they find out I lied to them.
It's the only way we can be sure he stays safe. Besides, they won't mind. When he comes back in a week or two, they'll understand why it was necessary. They'll be happy to forgive him. He may even win a Pulitzer Prize.
Yes, all right. I'll call him right away.
Excellent. Remember, not a word about this to anyone. Not until Bob comes home.
I'll remember. Thank you very much.
That was a close call.
Did it go well?
Possibly.
Did she believe you?
Probably.
But will it hold for long?
No, not likely. Eventually, she'll think about it, question it, perhaps even pursue it.
That makes your Thursday even more important, more imperative. You must get on with your assignment and get out immediately while there's still time.
Blazek.
Captain, this is Connor. I'm in a phone booth on D Street. Listen, don't call me at the bureau anymore. Someone's been listening in on our conversations.
What difference does it make?
What difference? Hell, you should have been there yesterday. The director reamed me out all the way up to the throat. You just don't know how mad he is at you.
I take it you didn't manage to convince him.
I never had a chance. He jumped on me before I even got my mouth open. I tried. Hell, I tried. I argued with him for almost an hour. But he says the case is closed, and that's the way it's going to stay. You know, he could be right. We really didn't have that much to go on, just a few coincidences.
A few coincidences, huh? Well, I got a couple more for you. I found the place in Maryland where he made those timetable notations. There's a railway bridge there, the one he drew in his notebook. He was there on Thursday, just 2 days before the presidential train passed.
Well, that could be another coincidence.
Maybe, but they keep piling up. We've got a lead on the car now. A gray Lincoln coupe with D.C. plates. The D.C. police have agreed to check out car dealers. But we need help. You've got to see the director again. You've got to convince him.
I can't. I mean...
You have to. Go and see him this afternoon.
Oh, listen. I don't think so. I think maybe we should wait a few days. Give him time to cool off. Maybe by then you'll have something more substantial to
him. Uh-uh. We can't wait. You've got to see him today. You do that.
I guess I've got to get back to the office before someone misses me. Remember, don't call me at the bureau anymore.
That night, the ninth man drove across the Anacostia River and headed down into the southeast sliver of Washington, with the sprawling grounds of both the naval station and Bulling Army Airfield cozied up to the Potomac. The citizens of Washington had thoughtfully provided him with a black night. Since early in the war, local patriots had started turning off their lights at dusk to show their commitment to the hardships of the war effort. The building he was seeking was a low, rambling warehouse far below the fence, down at the bottom of a mild slope. A munitions armory, according to the library research he'd done that afternoon.
A wide expanse of flat ground, perhaps a couple of hundred yards between fence and armory. No brush or trees, only dim, moonlit darkness. I can cross it easily. Scale the fence and make my way across the darkened ground. There are bound to be guards. Always are. But they won't be very alert. Not in the safety of their own capital. They only go through the motions, doing their rounds and calling out signs and countersigns.
He gathered his flashlight, his gun, and a wad of toe sacking, and climbed out of the car, which was concealed under some trees. He didn't use the flashlight until he neared the loading dock doors, and then flicked it on briefly for one quick look. He worked on the lock in darkness.
That's it.
Not until he was inside and the door closed behind him did he relax and flick the flashlight on again. From that point on, it was easy. He was able to roam quietly and efficiently through the long, pitch-black aisles of the munitions armory, checking the contents as though he were a supermarket shopper, playing his flashlight beam across the shelves laden with the massed provender of destruction.
Row 2, 100 yards of rifles, carbines, machine guns, mortars.
Row 3, fruits and vegetables. Crates of hand grenades stacked from floor to ceiling. Cases of ammunition, flares, landmines.
Rows 4, 5, 6. The meat and potatoes of war. Shelf after shelf of neatly piled high-explosive artillery shells. Fuses and propellant charges.
In a pinch, I can always turn a fragmentation shell into a workable demolition device. All I have to do is separate the projectile from its case and hook it up to a makeshift detonator.
But it's not the most effective explosive weapon in the world on a pound-for-pound basis. The steel jacket on a standard 105-millimeter howitzer shell will weigh over 30 pounds and contain less than 5 pounds of high explosive. You want something more compressed, something more devastating, something simple. The basic staples, the condiments of annihilation. A gourmet demolitions man will never settle for pre-packaged meals when he can construct his own.
This is more like it. Row 9. Chemical barrels labeled cordite. All right. Potassium nitrate, gun cotton, sodium.
Mix to taste. Sodium chloride combined with sugar, 3 parts to 2. Pack in lead pipe. No detonator needed. Just fuse and serve. A little timing mechanism to allow you to get away. And then give a party guaranteed to raise the roof.
No, not sodium chloride. A good base for an excellent explosive, but not in these days. Where would I get sugar? That's so rationed.
Potassium nitrate. That'll require only charcoal and a bit of sulfur.
Yes, potassium nitrate. That'll be better. Have to prise one of these cardboard barrels open. That's it. Powders packed in tightly waste paper bags. About 10 pounds each. Put another one in the tow sack just in case. There we are. In you go. Tie up the corners and you have a neat little bundle. Now, you need some sort of timing device.
Dogs. That can complicate matters. Human guards are one thing, dogs quite another. They're seldom as careless as their human masters.
Damn it. He's trying the locks.
If he keeps coming, I'll find the one I forced. Where to hide?
There's a dark gap in the middle of the row, just a few feet down. A cul-de-sac, where some of the munitions are being removed.
Yes.
Good boy. Easy now. Don't rush it.
flashing his light all over the place. He gets too close. Seems to have moved away. Why? Is he following my earlier trail to the back of the warehouse? Is he confused by the heavy smell of gun oil and cosmoline?
There's the guard. A marine. Going past at the end of the row. If the dog's gone ahead, then they're both behind you now.
Maybe I should make a break for it. If I hurry, I might... Damn you!
Stay where you are! Damn it! Damn to blazes!
We'll bring everyone.
Oh, gotta grab this sack and go like hell!
Yeah. Hi, sweetheart.
Oh, Ray. I've been so worried. Where have you been? I've been home for hours. I thought you... Oh, Ray.
Hey. Take it easy. What's all the fuss?
I was so worried. I thought you were gone. After the way you acted yesterday, I thought you were gone for good. I was so afraid it was something I did.
Oh, hell, sweetheart. I've just been out looking for a job, that's all. Fun one, too. It's a warehouse thing. I'm offloading merchandise at Sears Roebuck. $1.50 an hour.
You should have called. Oh, you poor man. You look so beat. Come here. Sit down. Let me get you a drink.
Yeah, that'll be nice. Bring it to the bathroom, will you, Sarah? I'm pretty dirty.
Yeah, sure.
Gotta try. Get this jacket off. Drop it on the floor. And now the shirt. Damn dog. It's torn the muscle. Oh, hurts like hell. Ridiculous woman thinks of it. Wash the blood and dirt away. Do your job. Get back to Germany. And then maybe go down with rabies.
Here's a drink, sweetheart. Ray. Darling, what happened?
Oh, the arm.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't want to worry you. It's not as bad as it looks. I got hung up in a load of baling wire. Oh. Guess I cut it a lot worse than I thought.
Well, at least they could have done was to dress it for you. Oh, it looks terrible. What's wrong with those Sears Roebuck people, anyway? Don't they take care of their employees?
Well, I guess they would have if I'd mentioned it. I was afraid to say anything. I felt they might lay me off if they got to know about the cut. Hell, I only just started and walk in there and...
More than just a cut. It looks as though you stuck your arm in a lion cage.
Oh, it's not that bad. Don't worry about
it. No, let me fix it for you. Sit down. I got some Acurachrome and Gore's here in the cupboard. Here, sip your drink while I dress it. Now, this is going to burn a bit.
Yeah, I guess it will.
Hell, I just don't understand people. How could they leave you?
Probably. I didn't even notice it. It didn't look that bad with my jacket on. Even you didn't spot it when I first came in.
No, I guess not. There. There we are. Looks a lot better now. I guess you can take your bath. Don't get your arm wet.
That's not quite as easy as it sounds.
I'll wash you if you like. Just get in the towel
and that won't be necessary. I'm sure I can manage. You see if you can rustle up something to eat in the meantime. I'm feeling kind of hungry.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll do that.
Funny, Sarah. Sometimes both, sometimes shy. Both likable characteristics, I guess. So worried that I left her. In 3 days, I'll have to. She'll wait, of course. I know that. Just like the hungry little sparrows that gather on her telephone wires to wait for her every morning and evening.
They depend on you. You start feeding them, they get to expecting it. What happens if you go away?
The morning of Tuesday, June 30th, 1942. The 18th day after the landing.
Oh, morning, Captain. I think you ought to see this. Hmm? Two-column head on page 3, about 6 inches of copy.
Hmm? Sure, I... Hell! Get me the FBI, right away. Ask for Emerson Carter.
Yes, sir. You got it.
Damn it. I knew it. I knew I was right. Well, right. Sticks are a mile. This is no coincidence. It's got to be him.
An armory break-in last night. Marine guard killed. Theft of unspecified materials. Thought to be the work of a single assailant working alone. Police cooperating with military authorities.
Excuse me, Captain. Your call. Pardon you, Aspel.
Thank you.
Hello?
Emerson, this is your old buddy. You called me yesterday.
What? Oh. I thought we decided it would be better if we didn't...
This is an emergency, I assure you. Now, did you talk to the director yesterday? Oh, hell. All right. We'll have to tackle it from a different direction. I need to see you. Can you get out?
Not very easily.
Think up an excuse. Look, someone broke into the naval armory last night. There's a story in the morning paper. Give me 30 minutes to do some checking, then meet me somewhere. Make it the Capitol building in Statuary Hall, okay? Sergeant Huffman?
Sir?
Call the armory for me, will you? Find out what was stolen. If it has anything to do with explosives, let me know. I want to talk to the officer in charge.
Yes, sir.
And when you finish that, see if you can set up a meeting with one of the president's personal advisors. Watson or McIntyre, maybe. The highest level possible. Tell them Mr. Carter of the FBI will be with me. Stress that it's urgent.
Right away, sir.
Well, we're being awfully proper, aren't we, Sergeant?
Well, I must admit, till I saw that story, I thought you were nuts.
And now?
I still hope you're nuts. I'm not so sure anymore.
Yeah, well, it could be another coincidence.
Yes, sir. Could.
Okay, make the calls.
That was The Ninth Man by John Lee. Adapted and dramatized for radio in 25 parts by Victor Magazine. You have been listening to Best Sellers, featuring the masterworks of famous authors that have captured the imagination of the world.